InPlay Radio is staying late for the NFL every Sunday. A specialist team of tipsters are on air from 6 until 1 a.m. bringing you the best bets every week. We'll also have experts from both sides of the pond in the build-up to the big games. InPlay Radio from William Hill. Your eyes on a world of sport.
Hello everyone, good to have you with us here. Week 8 of the NFL. It's Dave Kellner here in the studio with Gil Alexander from the Beating the Book podcast on the line right now, live from America, to look ahead to 5 televised games this weekend with the Wembley action between the Detroit Lions and the Atlanta Falcons kicking us off at 1:30 p.m. UK time on Sunday afternoon. We'll get stuck into the NFL action shortly, but first of all, it's a warm welcome to Mr. Gil Alexander. Good morning, Gil.
Dave, good morning. It's redemption week for me. Am I allowed one bad week? Is that allowed?
Of course it's allowed, Gil. We were talking off-air about last week and how the televised games in particular were difficult to call, and some of the big favourites going in last weekend, Gil. And for the first week on the podcast, I mean, we've been doing this for, well, this is the 7th week, week 8 of the NFL, that we've been recording these pieces. And for the first week, it was a bad week last week.
Yeah, I guess it's unrealistic to think we'll go 17 weeks without one bump in the road, but those were some interesting results last week.
Absolutely. Interesting movement from a personnel perspective during the week in the world of the National Football League as well, with Percy Harvin, Gil, being traded from the Seahawks to the Jets. Any thoughts on that particular trade?
Well, you know, that's what sort of was interesting about the Seattle Seahawks loss to the St. Louis Rams. Doug Baldwin, one of the wide receivers for the Seahawks, admitted after the Seahawks lost to the Rams, and that was a loss that was largely driven by 3 special teams plays, he admitted that basically as they were getting on the bus to travel to that game, they were informed as a team of that trade and that it really did affect them the way that it went down. So that sort of happened between our show and the actual game last week, and Seattle came out really flat, spotted St. Louis to a 21-3 lead. And so stuff like that, at least something that dramatic, that unexpected, really did have an effect on the actual players. Usually they're sort of impervious to that sort of thing, but he admitted that wasn't the case last week. It really did matter.
Yeah, it sounds like he's a divisive personality in the dressing room, Gil, but from everything I've read in the press, it suggests that he's liked by many of his teammates. Maybe not some of them, but some of them do definitely like him.
Yeah, he's certainly a dynamic talent. He's one of a kind. There's not a lot of players like him, not only, you know, currently, but sort of ever. He can change a game with one touch of the football. But Seattle felt, at least the coaching staff and then the brass in Seattle, felt that they were changing their identity too much on offense to accommodate Harvin. And had he been a more accommodating player, referring to the sort of locker room issues that you're intimating, then maybe they would have stuck around and seen it through. But given that both were happening, that he was sort of divisive and it wasn't working out for them, his stats were certainly diminishing as the weeks were progressing, and they gave up a lot to get him in the first place, they felt that it was prudent for them to part ways and sort of start fresh once again and regain their offensive identity. Seattle will be fine. There's no question they'll be fine. They're a playoff team, and you know who knows what else. Maybe a Super Bowl team again. We'll see. But listen, the Jets can't do any worse with Harvin. So good move for them.
Yeah, true. Let's get stuck into this week's action then, starting with the game at Wembley, which is a 1:30 p.m. start time. In the UK, the Detroit Lions at the Atlanta Falcons. The Lions 1-2, the Falcons 17-10, and this line sitting at 3.5. The Lions minus 3.5, 10-11, and the Falcons plus 3.5 at 10-11. Currently, the Lions sharing the lead in the NFC North with the Green Bay Packers, and they came from 14 points down last weekend to beat the New Orleans Saints. A team that gave up a lot of yardage last week, but the defense, which has been strong this season, Gil, stepped up when it needed to step up in the fourth quarter late in that game.
It absolutely did, and the Lions' defense is nothing short of spectacular, Dave. I mean, that's really been the key to this team this year. Keep in mind, they haven't had Calvin Johnson, Megatron. They haven't had him on offense. Really, for most of the year, Johnson was impactful week one, and then either on the field or off the field hasn't had any impact since then. He may very well be back in the lineup for the Lions in this game, and as you mentioned, very early for us stateside, 9:30 Eastern time, 6:30 for those of us on the West Coast. It's sort of like watching Wimbledon for us this game. But, on my show, I asked folks, you know, what they thought about this game, and a lot of people had no opinion. When a game is played in London, and there's going to be three of them, this is the second of three this year, most American handicappers sort of, they shy away. Well, I don't know how the travel's going to affect them. I love the Lions in this game. Absolutely love them. And largely for reasons on the other side of the ball, as you say, on the defensive side of the ball. I think the Lions will dominate the Falcons.
Well, what's been the problem with the Atlanta Falcons this season, Gil? Because a lot of it was expected of this team preseason. They do have offensive threats with Matt Ryan throwing the ball to Julio Jones and Roddy White. That looks a dynamic partnership at wide receiver, but it's not worked out for the Falcons this season.
Yeah, it hasn't worked out, and you know, most casual football fans, we focus on the quarterback and the other skill position players, running backs and wide receivers. But the Falcons are down five offensive linemen. I mean, there's really no team that's going to overcome that without, you know, getting beat time and time again. You know, they may sneak out a win here and there, but if you're down five offensive linemen, it's so tough. And in this game, they're going up against the team in the Lions that has the league's fifth best sack rate. They're in the top two defensively in, and I'll just rattle them off, yards per game allowed, total QBR allowed, which is a advanced metric from ESPN about quarterback play. Top two in the league in points per game allowed. Top two, as I mentioned last week, in third down defensive efficiency. In other words, the rate at which the opponent converts on third down. So the Falcons, with that offensive line hampered as is, go up against that. And on their side of the ball, they have a total defensively. We haven't even touched on the Falcons' defense. Mm-hmm. They only have seven sacks all year. And if you take one player on the Broncos, DeMarcus Ware, for instance, he's got seven alone. So they've got problems on both sides of the ball.
You mentioned Megatron briefly there. From a handicapping perspective, Gil, if Calvin Johnson was available for the Detroit Lions, it doesn't look like he will play at time of recording. What would this line be at, do you think, if he was available for the Lions?
Oh, I think he's worth a couple points for sure. And that's a big couple points in a game where you're favored by, well, I guess it's 3.5 now. So in this case, it may or may not be a big couple points. It does get you through four, which is not exactly a key number, but it's a number that matters. Calvin Johnson matters a whole bunch. He's one of these few players that is not a quarterback in the league that actually has an effect on a game. And we needn't look no further than some of these other teams in the league. A.J. Green's absence with the Bengals, for instance, has mattered a great deal to the Bengals. He's a big weapon for Andy Dalton that opens up all kinds of other things on offense, and the Bengals suffer without him. Steve Smith's addition in Baltimore, it's the other way around. His presence has given Baltimore so much more on offense in a way that honestly can't be measured in a box score.
Yeah.
Calvin Johnson's definitely worth a couple points for the Lions.
Okay, so liking the Lions minus 3.5 points could be a big opportunity for Reggie Bush to get some carries as well this weekend, Gil.
It could, and you know, the key to the Lions' success this year, David, can be distilled to what they do in the fourth quarter. Sometimes football's it's a very simple game. And I do hours on it, you do hours on it, but really it comes down to blocking and tackling and play calling. And the Lions have figured out this year, much like we talk about the Cowboys, how they've decided we're running the football, we have the personnel, we're going to commit to the run, that's all we're going to do, try to stop us. Well, in the fourth quarter of games, the Lions are 3-1 now in which they have led by one score in the fourth quarter. That is a notable stat. You say 3-1, what's the big deal about that? They're ahead. Well, they've been a league worst 8-11 in those games over the past two seasons. So the Lions have been notorious for squandering fourth quarter leads. Now they've decided we're going to actually run the ball when we're ahead in the fourth quarter. They've only dropped back to pass 35.3% of the time when leading by one score in the fourth quarter. That's a big drop from their 52.8 rate over the past two seasons. So before, one out of every two plays, a little more than one out of every two, with the lead in the fourth, they were passing the football. Now they say, you know what? We've got the personnel to run, whether it's Joique Bell or, as you say, Reggie Bush, we'll run the football. And they're doing that well, and they're preserving wins.
Superb. The Lions, a strong pick, then minus the 3.5 points in the game that's live at Wembley on Sunday afternoon. Let's look at the Baltimore Ravens now at the Cincinnati Bengals. 5 p.m. start time for this one Sunday afternoon. The Baltimore Ravens 10-11, the Cincinnati Bengals 10-11. I can't split them here in the UK, Gil. An AFC North clash. I can see a lot of people will be jumping on the Baltimore Ravens, given that they are 5-2 in the AFC North, while Cincy are 3-2-1. Obviously, this is a huge game as far as the division is concerned, and Baltimore come into this game on the back of big wins against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the Atlanta Falcons, but things are never as simple as they seem, Gil, and the Bengals have a particularly good home record.
Yeah, a gentleman on my show, Marco D'Angelo from Las Vegas, he is notorious for saying a team is never as good as they look one week, never as bad as they look one week. And as we know, a few weeks ago, we were ready to anoint the Cincinnati Bengals the greatest team that's ever stepped on a football field. And since then, they've lost twice and they've tied once. But they're very much one of these road-home, home-road split kind of teams. It's a very common thing in baseball for a team to perform a certain way at home, or at least individual players to perform a certain way at home and a different way on the road. Football, not so much. We don't refer to teams that way. But lately, and I mean lately, is in the last couple of years, there's been about three or four teams that have emerged as sort of identifying with home-road splits. Seattle, for instance, dominant at home, not so much on the road. You have a team like Atlanta that we just talked about, great at home, not so good on the road. And when I say not so good, I'm being kind. And by the way, technically that game at Wembley is a home game for Atlanta, but don't read into that. Cincinnati is one of these teams. They're not good at all on the road, but suddenly, you know, when they get home at their stadium, everything seems to click for them in a way that it doesn't when they're away from home. And that could be the case here. It's what makes this kind of game very difficult to handicap. And again, we talked about A.J. Green. Is he playing? Is he not? If he's not, God help the Bengals. They started out last week against the Colts. I think that was the one game I did get right on your show. The Colts destroyed the Bengals, largely because A.J. Green wasn't there. The first eight possessions for the Bengals, three and out. That's almost unheard of.
Yeah, it was that was an incredible match against the Colts. They dominated them in all areas of the game. And I suppose looking at this one statistically, Gil, the Ravens dominating the Bengals in all those the usual statistics that you just look at, the basic stats, Gil. The Ravens rank more highly than the Bengals in every real department at the moment.
They do, and not only that, if you look at the Ravens, just look at their win-loss record, you look at the scores of the games that they've won. Dave, they're not only beating teams, they're destroying teams. And so that leads the average person, wow, this team might be a juggernaut. They're just killing teams. Games aren't even close. But, you know, here's something to sort of chew on, and this is what makes me, you know, I not only do I not want to bet this game with my money, I don't want to bet it with your money either, Dave. It's a very tough game to decipher because over the last 4 weeks, Joe Flacco has four touchdown passes, one pick on deep passes. Let's take a deep pass stat, getting to the core of how they're crushing teams. And I'll define a deep pass by 20 yards or more. 57% completion on those. He's been great. But the Bengals' defense, they're a top five defense in the league in defending those very big plays. They've only allowed one touchdown and three, and they've gotten three picks, which is top, and they're also top five in total QBR allowed in that category, in the big play category. So the Bengals are great at preventing what has been the key to a lot of Baltimore success early on, not to mention the simplest stat of them all, the Bengals haven't been beaten Keep in mind they tied a game 2 weeks ago against the Panthers at home. But the Bengals have not been beaten at home in 12 straight games, and this line essentially is a pick 'em. So keep that in mind. It's what makes it sort of hard to handicap.
The Baltimore Ravens 10-11, the Cincinnati Bengals 10-11. Game taking place 5 p.m. UK time on Sunday afternoon. No betting that one. What about the Philadelphia Eagles at the Arizona Cardinals? 8 p.m. start time here in the UK. And this match, Gil, this is a match I'm very much looking forward to. The Eagles 5-4, the Cardinals 20-29. And the Cardinals minus 2.5 points with extra juice currently here in the UK at 5-6. And the Eagles plus the 2.5 points at even money. And the total points line is set at 48. Philadelphia second in the NFC East currently, sitting at 5-1, coming off a bye week with extra rest. And the Cardinals 5-1 in the NFC West. This is going to be a cracker as far as I'm concerned, because you've got the top rush defense in the league in the Cardinals going up against LeSean McCoy and Darren Sproles. It's an enticing matchup we've got to look forward to here, Gil.
It is enticing, and I love your word. David is a cracker. That is a word we don't use often. I love it. Well, you know, this is one of those where I'll give you all these stats that will probably favor the Cardinals, and at the end of it I'll say, and that's why I like the Eagles, Dave. But it is a great matchup. We tend to think of the Seahawks and the 49ers as the sort of the best teams in football, along with the Broncos and the Patriots the last couple seasons, and it bears out. Seattle and San Francisco are 16-6 in their last 22. Well, you know, the Cardinals are 15-7. They're just a game behind the teams that we think of as the best in football. They are sneaky good, and it's a team that is just not one that anyone necessarily thinks about. They're sort of off the radar. And in their last 12 games with Carson Palmer as a starter, they're 10-2. He has a 97.8 passer rating, which is a very difficult number to explain. Even those of us who have watched football for decades in the U.S. can't really explain what that number means. But suffice it to say that it ranks seventh in the NFL over that span, ahead of people like Tom Brady, ahead of Colin Kaepernick, ahead of Ben Roethlisberger, ahead of Andrew Luck. And, you know, they are – Nick Foles, on the other hand, now for the Eagles, last year we made a big deal of the fact that he threw 27 touchdown passes against just two picks. Well, this year he already has 10 turnovers, which is tied for second most in the NFL. The Eagles, while you cite their record correctly as at 5-1, they're 1-1 on the road, and they've got five turnovers collectively in those two games. And the Cardinals, on the flip side, they've only thrown one pick all year, and they've only committed three turnovers total in three home games. So all of that stuff makes you think, oh, well, this is all about the Cardinals. And yet, that bye that you mentioned, Philly coming off a bye, that really matters. They're getting Darren Sproles back, as you say. We didn't think we'd see Darren Sproles with his sprained MCL, but he'll be there. And LeSean McCoy sort of got reborn in the last game. I love the Eagles here.
And you mentioned those numbers on Foles. We all know he wasn't going to produce what he produced in 2013, Gil. It was unrealistic to expect it. And you can look at those turnovers in one of two ways. You can think Foles is regressing as a quarterback now, and the Eagles maybe won't be as productive as they have been in the past. Or you can look at it from the flip side of that and say Foles is turning the ball over, but the Eagles are still winning football matches, Gil.
You're 100% correct, which is why turnover stats specifically are a dicey thing to quote anyway. Plus, with turnovers, you know, ultimately turnovers and interceptions sometimes, you know, if a person shows a penchant for throwing picks after a while, then you can actually have some predictive reliability. But, you know, fumbles, for instance, completely unpredictable. Fumble recoveries, specifically, completely random. So turnovers are a kind of dicey thing to project forward to begin with. My thing with this game, and you're right, you know, that is a good point. Perhaps even the turnovers don't even matter for a team like Philly, which when they tend to score very quickly. That's another thing. Time of possession, which is a stat that we love quoting, especially with a team like Dallas, right? Well, they run the ball so well. Look at their time of possession. They're dominating the football. Well, you know what? If you score in two plays, what's the problem with that, right? And Philadelphia, which is never going to win any time of possession battle, they're so explosive on offense that a lot of stats sort of get thrown out the window with them. I just think in this case, this is sort of a matchup issue with me. The Arizona Cardinals defense is a blitzing defense. They're very aggressive. Nick Foles has found his tight ends a lot early this year. That combination sort of leans to the fact that the Eagles can exploit an overly aggressive Cardinals defense. I said before I love the Eagles. Maybe that was hyperbole. Maybe it was a bit of overstatement on my part. I like the Eagles in this game, but I certainly do lean that way.
The Philadelphia Eagles, the pick, plus 2.5 points at even money. While we are talking about misleading statistics, just before we move on to the late games on Sunday night and Monday night, Gil, the Cardinals 31st against the pass this season. That is a misleading statistic because they are so good against the run that sometimes teams are just trying to play catch-up, Gil.
Well, yeah, exactly. If you're ahead in games, you know, the most misleading stats are the ones that are per, you know, sort of per game. Or, you know, usually the stats, yards, when we're talking about yards, yards per play, to me, is a much more indicative stat than yards per game.
Yeah.
Because as you point out, if the Cardinals are ahead of games, well, of course the other team's going to have to throw the ball a lot. So, yeah, you know, you're going to give up a total number of yards that then looks poor on the stat sheet. So you're absolutely right. There's a number of stats in the NFL that require a little more digging into before you can draw a conclusion with them.
Let's move on. We're in the Dome late on Sunday night. The Green Bay Packers at the New Orleans Saints. The Packers 21-20. The Saints in the betting at 4-5. The Packers plus 1.5 points on the spread, 10-11. The Saints minus 1.5 points, 10-11. If you're looking at anti-post betting, Gil, I think in the States it's called futures betting. The Packers now second favourites to win the Super Bowl behind the Denver Broncos. Are you surprised to see that particular quote? 8-1, I think it is here, with William Hill for the Packers to win the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I am surprised to see that. That's, you know, we have a word for that in football betting. It's called recency, meaning the overweighting of recent activity over historical data. And yeah, I mean, the Packers have been great, but for them to be the second favorite, that seems to me to be a bit of an overreaction. Not that they haven't been good, but let's give them a little more time here to establish something.
Has this line moved at all in Vegas? Talking about this match now, Gil, 1.5 point favorites, the Saints. Has that moved at all?
It's bounced around, you know, a point and a half, but it hasn't moved through anything key. So in other words, it's always been between the 3 and the 0 there. So yeah, the movement, there has been movement, but it's not significant movement in any way to this point. Now, I could see perhaps before game time some serious money coming in one way or the other. But I will tell you this, Dave, I don't know how you bet a side in this game. Too much can be, you know, you can make an argument for both sides here, which we'll get into. Very tough game to handicap.
Yeah, the Packers have been really turning it on in recent weeks, as you referenced there, Gil. Wins against the Bears, the Vikings, the Dolphins, and the Panthers. And they've blossomed with Aaron Rodgers connecting seemingly every single week with Jordy Nelson and Randall Cobb with monotonous regularity. They are really linking up well, Rodgers, with his wide receivers at the moment.
Well, that's the understatement of them all. I mean, in the last four games, as you say, the four-game winning streak, Aaron Rodgers has at least 3 touchdown passes and 0 picks in each of those 4 games. Now, that ties a record set by Tom Brady during his historic 2007 season. That was the season where the Patriots went undefeated until losing in the Super Bowl. In fact, over those 4 games, Rodgers, 13 touchdown passes, 0 interceptions. That's unbelievable. But they come into this game against the Saints, and the Saints are, you know, supposedly reeling. While the Packers are 5-2, the Saints are 2-4. However, you know, those two wins are at home. They're 2-0 this season at home. We talked about the home-road splits. No team more identified with a home road split than are these New Orleans Saints. Once they get in that dome, they are ridiculously good. In fact, and let's sort of chew on these, since 2010, they're 11-0 in primetime home games. And by primetime, we mean the big nighttime games, either a Sunday night or a Monday night game. 11-0. And again, with this spread as close to a pick 'em as we can sort of get, the straight-up 11-0 kind of matters here. Here's another one. The Saints are 18-0. 18-0 when both Sean Payton and Drew Brees are both available home games. 18-0 in their last 18, that is. They lost before that, but 18-0 in their last 18. So as great as Aaron Rodgers has been, as great as the Packers have looked recently, you just kind of have to throw it out the window when you face the Saints team, especially in this situation.
It's the winning margins on that run as well, Gil. They've not been winning by 1 or 2 points. They've been blowing teams away on occasion as well. It is tough to bet against the New Orleans Saints. Is there a case to be made for saying that both these quarterbacks are going in different directions right now as far as looking forward in terms of their future careers? Rodgers looks to be still banging his peak, and I'm not sure the same can be said about Drew Brees right now.
You know, it would be a premature, I think, conclusion to draw, because the second that will come out of anyone's mouth about Drew Brees, he will put out the performance of a lifetime. I promise you. Aaron Rodgers, without question, still one of the elite quarterbacks in the NFL, and I am not in any way prepared to say that Drew Brees is not. We talked, though, earlier, and I think this is the key. So let's take it away from Drew Brees for a second. Again, a lot of this is much simpler than we make it out to be. A lot of it can be play calling. And I talked about how the Lions have figured out in the fourth quarter, hey, when we have a lead, maybe we should run the ball a little more. Well, you know who's the flip side of that? The Saints. They're 1-3 this season in games in which they've led by one score in the fourth quarter after going 4-2 in them last season. So keep in mind, they're 2-4, but they've led in the fourth quarter in four games, and they're 1-3 getting out of that. So what is the difference? We talked about how the Lions have committed more to the run when they're ahead in the fourth quarter. The Saints have done the exact opposite. They have gone from a drop-back rate of 51.7% in the past with the lead, meaning basically one out of every two times that they have a play with the lead in the fourth quarter, they pass and run. Well, now it's 69% of the time they're passing with the lead in the fourth quarter. Now, you can say to yourself, well, maybe they don't feel they have the personnel to run the football. Well, you know who has a very poor or porous run defense? The Green Bay Packers. So I don't know. As tempting as it is to say, well, the Packers look so great, it doesn't look like it's the best matchup for me anyway in this going to New Orleans. I would steer very clear of putting your money in this game.
Yes, indeed. The Packers 21-20, the Saints 4-5, the Saints giving up 1.5 points on the spread. Before we look at the Monday Night Football, desperate to get onto the Redskins shortly, it's worth mentioning the total points line as well, Gil. 56 points. Is that the largest this season?
I believe it is. Yes, it is. I believe it is, and I kind of think it's justified.
Yes.
It's amazing to say that, but I think it is. The only thing that that's worrisome, and this applies to not only the total but also to the side, is Jimmy Graham healthy for Drew Brees? He didn't have a catch in the loss to Detroit last week, and he's still dealing with a shoulder injury that limited him in practice at least a couple days ago in practice. So his status is very much, it's questionable. Even if he suits up, is he anything more than decoy? If he is at full strength, if he is really a weapon, I could see that number going over, But there's no way to really know how he's doing.
The past three meetings between Drew Brees and Aaron Rodgers average more than 70 points per game, with more than 2,000 total passing yards and a combined 19 touchdown passes.
Isn't that amazing?
ESPN. It's just those numbers are just absolutely incredible, aren't they, Gil, really?
They're incredible, and allow me, if I might, just to go back to the game at Wembley between the Lions and the Falcons for a moment, since we're talking about totals. I'd mentioned this the first time there was a game at Wembley this season. For whatever reason, I don't know if it's the travel, I don't know if the defenses don't show up as nicely as they do when they don't have the travel, but there have been 9 games thus far at Wembley in the NFL since 2007, and the average total in those games is 48.11 points. If you throw out the very first game back in 2007, then the average over the last 8 goes to 51.25 points. If you just take the last 4 games since 2012, it goes up to 54.25 points. And that includes, by the way, a 52-point game between the Dolphins and Raiders that were played earlier this week, that was played earlier this year, I should say, at Wembley. I don't know if there's anything to that, but it is interesting to sort of monitor because the total is not anywhere near 50. It's, I believe, 47 right now for that game at Wembley. What you're discussing between Breeze and Rodgers makes much more sense, makes far more sense, and you can actually draw a straight line from those two guys and those two offenses to that total. Yeah, when you soar over 70, I mean, that's no joke. 57 doesn't look all that high after hearing that.
Indeed, 46.5, the current total points line on the Lions at the Falcons, which is the Wembley game this week. And we finish off this edition of the NFL podcast with the Washington Redskins at the Dallas Cowboys. We've got to, Gil. The Redskins 7-2, the Cowboys 1-5. The Redskins plus 10 points with extra juice here at 20-23. The Cowboys minus the 10 points at 20-21. NFC East clash on Monday Night Football, and two teams, I'm afraid to say, Gil, at opposite ends of the table right now.
Yes, you would be correct. And again, full disclosure for those who haven't listened to us before, I grew up in Washington, D.C. I'm a Redskin fan. I'll be the first to tell you they're awful. And this used to be not only the greatest rivalry in football, but a case could be made that this was the greatest rivalry in American sports.
Yes.
Through the early 80s for sure. No longer the case. The Redskins have Colt McCoy now as their starting quarterback. He actually was a All-American college football player at the University of Texas, so this is a sort of de facto homecoming game for him. But I will say this, Colt McCoy, who looked very good in relief of Kirk Cousins last week for the Redskins, the Cowboys now have a week to prepare for Colt McCoy. That's a totally different proposition than all of a sudden facing a guy who you don't expect to face coming off the bench. So they've been able to prepare for him now. And this is a mismatch. There's a reason why this number at last check is about 9.5 consensus. You might see 10 with reduced juice, 9 with extra juice, as you say. But, the Skins 0-8 against division opponents. Now, these are straight-up numbers, and I realize that's not the same as against the spread here. But if you'll allow me, 0-8 against division opponents, 1-8 in their last 9 on Monday Night Football. Do you really want to even consider? And I have guys on my show who love getting all those points, just as a rule, sort of a knee-jerk reaction. They lose their Vegas wise guy card if they back a favorite, a large favorite, so they sort of instinctively be like, no, I got to take the underdog. Let me just tell you, that would be a bad move here.
Okay, so not with the Washington Redskins. What do you make to Colt McCoy under center? You suggested that the Cowboys, with the time to prepare for him, will be able to handle him. Do you think he's not the long term future of the franchise? Do you still view Robert Griffin III as the long term future, Gil?
I do. For lack of a better answer, really. Robert Griffin III, and we could do 10 minutes on it, but he was an amazing player as a rookie. He rewrote the rookie record book. He was not only, this dynamic player, but people tend to forget he was the most accurate passer in the league his rookie year. But then a spate of injuries, and he is a shell of what he used to be. Those injuries actually created really bad habits as well. So we don't know if Robert Griffin III will ever be as good as he looked that rookie year. We really don't. But, to answer your question, is he the future at this point? I think he is still, for lack of a better answer. It's certainly not anybody else who's on the roster. It's not Kirk Cousins. It's not Colt McCoy, who in his career is 6-15 as a starter, which is the third worst in the league among active quarterbacks with at least 20 starts. So that's not good either. Yes, in his defense, he was playing for the Cleveland Browns for those. But nothing really to pretend that Colt McCoy's got what it takes. He's a, you know, a fine backup,
yeah.
But I don't know that he'll be a great starter anywhere long term.
And we've got the fingers crossed, our fingers crossed, that RG3 comes back fit and healthy, because he's going to be playing for a contract at some point in the near future as well, Gil.
Yeah, he will be. But, you know, that's a problem for tomorrow for the Redskins, and that's one of many problems that franchise has. There's so many, and there's a lot on defense now too. You know, this was a defense that was pretty formidable in the last couple of years. The one thing that you could say about the Redskins, you know, even when they were bad, was, well, you know, their defense is pretty good. Well, their best, probably their biggest name defensive player is Brian Arakpo. Brian Arakpo is out for the season again. He tore his pectoral muscle, which is not the first time he's tore a pectoral muscle to, you know, kick him out for the rest of the season. And so when you can't stay on the field, when your best, supposedly best defensive player can't stay on the field, that's actually a skill. In baseball, we talk about that. You know, staying on the field is a skill. And so the Redskins won't have him in this game against a Dallas offense that this pains me to say, because this is the Redskins' chief rival, Dave, but this offense is unbelievable. And if you watched the game last week, and Lord knows I had a bet on the Giants, and
me too.
Probably many listeners did too, and let me just apologize in advance, but every time Dallas needed a play, they were able to do it. If they needed third and short, they got it. If they needed a big play, they got it. And it all starts with that offensive line. They have an amazingly effective offensive line. I'm actually staying where you're calling me today with a friend who is a big Cowboys fan, and he isolates it down to two offensive linemen specifically, a second-year center out of Wisconsin named Travis Frederick, and a rookie guard out of Notre Dame named Zach Martin. These guys are pushing people off the line, and for all the hype about DeMarco Murray, and he's been great, don't get me wrong, the first running back in the league to ever start a season with seven straight 100-yard games, he's been incredible, and it's all because of that line. And Tony Romo, who, you know, the average American football fan loves to criticize, and he's always gotten a bad rap. He's always had to shoulder too much of the blame over the years for the Cowboys' woes. This year, he is flourishing. 69.2 completion percentage. His passer rating is a career best. It's fourth in the league. He's also fourth in yards per attempt, tied for fifth in touchdowns, tied for tenth in yards, five straight games with at least two touchdowns. Three of his six picks, if you recall, came during the first half of the season opener. So he's only thrown three picks since halftime of the first game. And here's the key. After halftime this season, Dave, Tony Romo has the highest total QBR in the National Football League.
Wow.
He has been great when it counts the most. Last week, alluding to what I just said, perfect on third downs. You can't beat that.
The Dallas Cowboys giving up the points, minus 10 at 20-21 here then, Gil. You like them giving up the points as well?
I do. I just don't see how the Redskins stop them. I just don't see how they stop them. And if you start to, you know, again, the preparation against a quarterback in Colt McCoy who's not very experienced, if you start forcing turnovers and you give Romo, DeMarco Murray, and Dez Bryant a short field, good Lord. I mean, the Cowboys can rack up a lot of points in that game. So, yeah, you know, you're not going to make a living long-term giving up those kinds of points in the NFL, but this is one of those where I would give up the points. I like Dallas here.
Superb. DeMarco Murray on course for eight straight games with over 100 yards. He should get it against the Redskins, Gil, you'd imagine as well. What do you think's changed about him as a runner? Is it all to do with the offensive line, or has something changed in his style of play as well?
Well, he had some injuries, but I think the biggest, he's always been a very good back when he's been in the lineup. But I just think Dallas has what, you know, it has the personnel. And again, I'll give a nod to the Cowboys fan friend of mine who I'm staying with here. He was much more in tune with their team, and he will tell you that the Cowboys probably got really lucky drafting the guys they drafted. I don't know if your listeners know, but Johnny Manziel, who was the most heralded college football player in the country, was available for the Cowboys to take. And he's a Texas guy. He came out of Texas A&M. And there was a big, you know, groundswell for the Cowboys, America's team, to draft this kid. And the Cowboys held firm, and they're like, you know what? We're not going to draft him. And two position, you know, two picks before they were to draft, there was another guy on the board that the Cowboys might have drafted, but he got picked. And so they were left with these, you know, another offensive lineman to pick. And these turned out, maybe serendipitously, just to be great picks for them. And guys who are really Pro Bowlers. And they're just, if you watch, just keep your eye on the line of scrimmage during a Cowboys game when they're running the football. That line just moves people off of it. So DeMarco Murray, and it's, in a way that almost Emmitt Smith did in the Cowboys' heyday of the 90s, where Emmitt Smith would go untouched for 5 yards before anyone even laid a finger on him, let alone tackled him.
Yeah.
DeMarco Murray is that kind of way. And so I think he's always been good, and now they have the personnel to just make it soar. And so good for the Cowboys to have realized this and committed to the run. And again, we've cited those stats in past weeks about how much they're committing to the run. The only red flag, and this won't apply to this game, Dave, but I'll leave you with this. Later in the season, they are giving Murray the ball a whole bunch. Mm. He has 187 carries so far through 7 games. That's 61 more than any other player in football. That's on a pace for 400 carries, which would be unprecedented. So at some point, they're going to have to pare that back just to preserve him. But that's a matter for later in the season.
Absolutely. Superb. Thank you, Gil. And we'll finish off with what we like to call the luck of the week and the shock of the week. So what's your best bet on the – give you the entire card to aim for here, Gil?
Lock of the week is Detroit. I love Detroit at Wembley against the Falcons. That'll give everybody something to bet on. So not inside the confines of the stadium, obviously. Roger Goodell won't let you do that, Dave. But across the street, you can certainly put your money on the Lions. The travel doesn't bother me in this game. I really like the Lions at Wembley. That's my lock.
And the shock, Gil?
And the shock, that's a very good question. What would the shock be? Again, shock is such an interesting word here because it requires, an underdog to cover. And the Jets, unfortunately, are a favorite here, so they wouldn't be shocking. But they are 1-6, so I don't know if that qualifies as a shock, but let me go with that one because they're 1-6.
Yes.
The Jets, 1-6 at home against the Buffalo Bills, who are 4-3, and the Jets are actually 3-point favorites. I love the Jets in this game. They can run the football. They can stop the run. Those are two really fundamental ingredients to a good football team. It hasn't worked out on the scoreboard for them, but the Bills' front seven is banged up. They've lost their two starting running backs in Fred Jackson and C.J. Spiller, and the Jets have lost 6 straight. I think they're going to come out, and they're going to exploit the Bills' deficiencies in this game. I love the Jets at 1-6 getting the outright victory and covering against the Bills.
The Jets -3 points at 20-21 here with William Hill. And if you are a couch potato, Gil, on Sunday, this Sunday, you don't have to leave the couch for 16 hours. You can watch 16 hours of live NFL action if you wish to do so.
Thanks to you in England. Yes, we have that privilege. We love it.
Thank you, Gil. Make sure you check out Gil's podcast, at Beating the Book, also available on iTunes as well, Gil.
Yes, absolutely. Just or, and then you can just type in Gil Alexander with 2 L's on iTunes, and it'll pop up as well.
Superb. Thank you, Gil. Enjoy this week 8, and we'll speak again soon.
Dave, love you. Thank you, sir.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.